I'm making a note here, huge success. It's hard to overstate my satisfaction.
Oh, the delay makes it so hard.
That'll be fun for you to sync up.
Brendan and Mark discuss trans rights, individualism, and comfort. Spoilers for the end of the Barbie movie at 1 hour and 7 minutes. It's episode 25 of Convergence. Aw, he thinks he's people.
You said singing, and there is a song called Sitim, which goes, Sidim, Sidim is the opposite of standing. Sidim is the opposite of running around. Sidim is a wonderful thing to do because you Sidim. And it's apparently a comedian. That's not his real voice.
Okay.
And he also knows that it's sitting, but it's called Sidim. Sometimes I'm triggered, you know, people say certain things. And when you said singing the way you did, it made me go, Sing-im, Sing-im is the opposite of speed.
I love that. I imagine like a marimba or something going like,
yeah, oh yeah, yeah. I think he just delivered it into his phone one day and then it's become highly remixed. And it was all over TikTok. And it is, it's like an improvised little song because he goes off into a whole verse. It's just like improvised.
That's great.
But it's rather fun.
I love it.
I'm waiting on an important message from my bank.
Ooh, bank notes.
Because I got an important message from my bank today.
Is that the one that we might have talked about before?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's
so
exciting.
I am now very tired, but mortgage free.
Oh my God, dude. That's incredible. Congratulations.
And debt free.
Congratulations, dude. That's incredible.
Thank you.
I'm so happy for you.
Thank you. I screwed it up.
Okay.
I had to do a bank transfer. Like, banking in the UK is a lot, thankfully, is a lot easier than I think it is in America. And so, you know, we can do these electronic transfers very easily, and they're usually instant. That's how the money, what me and my dad won, that's how it was delivered to us. And it arrived like bang on the dot, bang on the stroke of noon today.
Amazing.
One of the first things I did was you know, ring my mortgage provider and say, what's the final settlement figure? Because there's early repayment fees to pay. Mm-hmm. So what's the final number? And then I tapped that into my phone app. I had to raise the limit first because my app was like, you can't transfer that much, you crazy person. And so then I said, can I please? And they were like, oh, okay, cool. Just as long as you tell us beforehand.
Yeah, just ask nicely.
Yeah, and the rules are you put the sort code in, which is a bit like a routing number, I think, in America.
Okay.
You put the account number in. And then what you're supposed to do if you're going to do a something like this is put in as the reference number, you would put in your mortgage account number, and there's a specific way that you're supposed to do that. And I forgot to do that.
Oh, bummer.
So I just sent my bank a really big amount of money and just be like, you do with that whatever you like. Here's some money. Here's no way to, like, just have some money. So I had to ring them up and be like, hey, so I did a really stupid thing, and figure out, you know, how they can allocate the large amount of money that I've just given them to pay off my mortgage. But I think it's all going to be fine.
Yeah.
So that depleted my limit. And then the deal we had in place, me and my dad, is that we are giving my brother some money.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to now approve that with my bank because it's more than the limit.
For sure.
So I'm waiting for that to be okay so that I can pay him some giftage.
Yay.
And then it's like today I've just been trying to get rid of this money like it's toxic.
I can't keep this money.
Yeah. No. I'm keeping about £10,000, which, you know, is not an inconsiderable amount of money.
No.
And that's, you know, after being sensible and grown up with the disbursement of this, of the rest of the money.
Yeah.
This is what I get to keep for myself.
Yeah. So I'm still learning all the tips and tricks about like offering advice, being coachy, like that. Like, again, like you've done nothing wrong. These are just thoughts. And I'm just like, I've been learning so much from Ramit Sethi and really liking his advice. And I just feel like you know, it's always a good time to follow good advice.
Are you going to do a money conversation on me, Brendan?
I don't know it enough yet at all. But he does. And my suggestion is really like, check him out, like check out some of his podcasts and his book, I Will Teach You to Be Rich. Like, I think that it has such great advice that I'm trying to follow. And I just feel like you're at this interesting milestone where you're debt-free and you have a stable income. You have a little bit of savings now, like following some of his steps to automate and get some investments going so that you can just, I don't know what the retirement situation, I know we have Social Security, which pays a pittance when we retire. Yeah, so I have you have.
I will have a pension.
Okay.
A state pension. You know, at some point I will, you know, sell this place and move into, probably go straight here into sheltered housing, to be honest, which you can get in your 50s, because I love the idea of sheltered housing. Mm-hmm. Or not necessarily like sheltered housing, but like the kind of place where you're set up, it's your own place, you're not in a home, it's your own place, but there is someone on site who can like look after stuff. And for me, I'm like, ooh, that's perfect.
That sounds really,
you know what
nice.
I mean? Someone who can just come around and, you know, change a thing if a thing needs changing. And I, you know, I don't have the capacity to do it myself. That kind of thing is very handy.
Sure.
And so I'm like, I'm just waiting for the time when I can move into one of those. But, you know, the lovely thing is, you know, we'll see what happens in the next 10 years in terms of inflation and property values and all that stuff. But, you know, I have a chunk now. I have a property of which I have 100% equity. So that is helpful.
That's true. Yeah. So you have an investment there.
Yeah. You know, so even just for, even if I don't move anywhere, I have a place that I can live in. And as long as I can keep up the, well, even if I don't keep up the maintenance charge, I don't think they can throw me out of this place. They would just, I don't know what would happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they can throw me out because I own this flat now, you know. This is probably a lease thing to figure out there. But anyway, but yeah, I will have that. And then there's, you know, there's the other bit that is perhaps a little gauche, but I have parents.
Sure.
And they, you know, they're not rich, but they don't not have money. And, you know,
yeah,
that's a fact of life.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's those things as well.
Must be nice.
Which, you know, is gross, but it is what it is. So yeah, I, you know, I'm not as worried for my retirement as I was, but I also want to pick up on the point with the Ramit Sethi thing is I am no longer, I think we've used, possibly explored this analogy before, but I'm no longer thrashing around in the water looking for a life belt.
Nice.
I am now able That's to wonderful. Stand and look at the surroundings and go, okay, you know, what would be, how do I make good, you know, moves here rather than going, flailing and going,
Yeah.
So, yeah. And, I'm saying, and this sadly doesn't help you and I specifically, but I'm trying to figure out ways that I can make this work. But I am planning a big road trip with my dad and possibly my brother to quite a few of the southern states of America because we want to do a music tour.
Oh, great.
And then at another point, so I'm saving up for that, but at some other point, I've got to figure out how to get myself over to you.
Awesome. Yeah, I've been building a list with Margaret of all the places that I want to share with you when you do come. Because I honestly, like, if somebody were to come to town and be like, oh, yeah, what's good here? What should you do? And my mind would be really blank. As a nine and other things, like I like to merge, and you know, I don't really like everything is kind of great to me. I don't really have a lot of preferences on things, and it's like, yeah, I'll do whatever you want to do. You're here, like, yes. So I've been, whenever I have like a really nice experience, I'm keeping a note right now, specifically with you in mind. But saying it out loud, I'm like, oh, I guess I could use it for anybody if anybody was asking me. But yeah, I'm excited for that day when you do come by. I was hoping that I could take you to Pickathon, which is a local music festival. It's like 4 days long of Americana and blues and bluegrass and country and rock and rockabilly and like rap. And it's like a whole range of stuff. And there's like all these stages are just made from like used pallets and like, you know, it's handmade, like just plywood that they found around, like built things, and it's in the woods and it's in these fields and it's, there's a bunch of food, like 20, 30 food carts come in, and like, and everybody's just so happy. Oh, and then I went 2 years ago, and they had like a mindfulness meditation area too, that was like in this little nook of the meadow, and like they put a bunch of rugs down, and somebody came in with singing bowls, and like, man, it was so fun. And like, there was a little craft making section where we got to make these little smelling salts things with essential oils, and you got to make a mix of 10 drops of them and stuff. And I smell that every couple of days just to like bring me back to that point. It was, yeah, it's that sensory, like, memory kind of thing. And oh, so great.
Good times.
Mm-hmm. Oh, funny thing I just heard about senses. Every scent, all five senses are actually touch. Smell is particles hitting your nose, and taste is like you're physically touching something to be able to taste it. And sight is light waves hitting your eyes. You know, hearing is sound waves hitting your eardrums and moving them and actually physically touching them. This is kind of funny.
Yeah, the sight one is the only one that I can't quite jive with, but like hearing, because it is, yeah, everything's vibration and it's vibrating your eardrums and that stuff. The waves hitting the, because I don't know if it makes an eye vibrate.
Well, it's still light particles and light waves that are.
Well, this is the weird thing, because I think the idea of five senses, it's what they teach in school, but it's like, yeah,
it's so limited.
It is not, you know, because there is heat. Heat, I mean, it is, like you've said there, it is a form of touch, but it's not contact.
Right.
Well, you know, you know what I mean? It's not direct contact, but it's very much a sense.
Yeah, and proximity. Like you can sense that something's close to you.
That was the next one,
Yeah. And
orientation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Balance, like these are all senses, but they, yeah, it's weird that we decided at some point, nope, it's just the five.
Yep, humor, even.
Yes, I'll find it one day. Yeah, I'm looking forward to being able to save, to be able to do things like come and see you and stuff. Yeah, and I've got to go see my friend, patron saint of the podcast, in South Carolina.
Amazing.
I've got all sorts of places to visit.
Are you going to be able to see her on that road trip?
I don't think so, because I think the way we're angling it, it's more like probably into Texas, because I want to show my dad 6th Street in Austin, and then along to, trying to do this from memory rather than looking at the map. But along the sort of east coast, then the bottom there, and then up a little bit, maybe we were talking about flying out from Atlanta because it's a hub, but I think we're probably going to skip Atlanta because I've already done it. And yeah, I want to, you know, because I had such a lovely time there, and the open bars, the music spilling out and all that kind of stuff, like it's just great. And then, yeah, we're going to do, you know, Bourbon Street in, you know, the place where they do the Mardi Gras.
Yeah. Louisiana?
Yeah. The particular place in Louisiana,
New Orleans. That's the one.
New Orleans,
New Orleans.
I really enjoy. That's one of the things I really enjoy, because we're going to go to Kentucky, and I want to see if I can find. I always want to do this because it just makes me laugh. How people, like, when they're properly in Louisville, like, you can't say it's not Louisville. Like, you've got to swallow your tongue. Like, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
whoa.
Yeah.
It always makes me giggle, like, how people really bend over backwards to be like, no, it's in his but then we've got silly place names here with all our Sostershires. And our weird rule that if something, like, we have a place here called Toaster, but it's not spelled Toaster. Okay. It's spelled, you know, Toaster. Because that's the rule. If it's spelt Sester, then it's not pronounced Sester. Weird.
Anyway. Yeah, it is weird.
Words are weird.
Oh, Toaster. That reminds me of food. I'm so hungry.
Before we get onto food, as I'm sure we will.
Yeah.
How was court?
Oh, it's on Monday.
Oh, fuck. Right, sorry.
No worries.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. No, Yep, it's coming up. It's still that. Speaking of, speaking of food, so it's coming up on Monday.
Here's piece of evidence number.
I've been pretty stressed, dude. Like I know,
oh, no.
I know that you know, earlier in this podcast I was saying about how like, you know, I can kind of keep my peace even though I stressful things come up. And you know, I'm really being tested on that claim. I do still feel like I am handling it way better because of my practices now than I would like 5 years ago. It's night and day different. But it truly is adding up, and it's really as we get closer and closer to this arbitration date, it's weighing heavy on me. And over the past 2 weeks, I have strayed far from my typical practices. I've been eating a lot of processed foods. I told you earlier about these little ice cream sandwiches that I found that were just four ingredients, and they were like, it's a whole food. And I was like really excited about it. And then, you know, that was just kind of like a little bit of a gateway drug. And I like kind of had like, oh, well, they also have a pint of ice cream. And even though that's like way more sugar in the pint, that's fine to eat in one sitting as well. And then I had those a couple times. And then I was like, oh, well, I could have these keto bars that I used to have all the time, even, you know, because they're no sugar, but really that, you know, they are sugar. There's a bunch of different types of sugar that they can label as not sugar to be keto compliant. And like, and then I'm like, I have one of these bars and I'm just like, fuck, this isn't at all what I'm trying to, like, I'm so far. And I've been having, there's this place really close to me that has these amazing chimichangas. And I've had, you know, I was having like two a week. And because I was having those, I started having these grocery store burritos and chicken sandwiches. And like, it just escalated. I started having these way processed foods and I was like, puffing up, being super bloated, super, like I was gaining, like I gained like 10 pounds in a week and a half, 2 weeks. I was just stress eating so much. And I couldn't just stop. So I decided to take another fast. So I started a fast a few days ago and I'm doing a different fast this time. I'm doing a bone broth fast, which is fun. There's some guidance, or some suggestion. So not a lot is known about autophagy and how it turns on and how it triggers, and they're still learning a lot about it. And there's an understanding that having any protein at all kills autophagy. But there's another train of thought that it's not an on or off thing. It's a scale, you know, it ramps up and it ramps down and it ramps up depending on how much you have. So there's a theory, at least from one blogger I found, who I'm following their advice at the moment, I don't remember who it was, that you can have a bone broth fast and still be in autophagy. I'm personally looking for autophagy because of my belly skin, the stretched skin that I really want to tighten up and get rid of. And so like I want to multitask while I'm doing something that is, you know, kind of difficult. I would like for that to also be tucked away while doing the fast. So but the bone broth fast allows me to feel a little more satiated, kind of have some oral sensations and other things like that. But man, and so the fast is feeling great. And I'm feeling great. I'm not really hungry, even though I said I was hungry. What I really mean is I want food. So I want to soothe myself with food so bad. Like peanut, I was making a little, I have this recipe for this really great little peanut butter dish that I make as a snack. And I was making it for Margaret yesterday. It's one clove crushed garlic, about a tablespoon and a half of za'atar seasoning, a couple teaspoons of olive oil, half a teaspoon of sea salt, a little bit of onion powder, and about maybe a half a cup of peanut butter. And it's super good. It's a very healthy. It's a great dessert. It's punchy with the fresh garlic and the salt, and but also kind of mild with the olive oil and peanuts. Anyways, I was just like salivating while I'm making this thing. It's just like, oh, I want this so bad. I just want.
Oh, I don't know how you can do that.
I just want.
I don't know how you can make food that you no.
Yeah, Yeah,
that feels tricky.
I make Margaret breakfast most mornings, and I don't eat breakfast. And yeah, I'm just kind of used to making food and not eating. So it's pretty common for me. So, but yeah, so I plan on being on the fast until Tuesday, until after the arbitration is done, because I kind of want to stay in. Because when you're deep in a fast and you're in ketosis, your brain is firing on ketones instead of sugar, glucose, and it runs at like a higher octane, whatever that means. I don't really understand octane, but like, you know, it's running differently, and it's supposed to be better. The theory is, or the understanding is, like, if you were, you know, like 10,000 years ago as hunters, it's a couple of days since our last kill, evolutionarily,
yes,
we want to have our senses heightened.
Yes, and of course.
So that we can make that kill. And then we get that kill and we're fat and happy and we just kind of relax and stuff. So I don't want to eat right before, because then I'd be like more complacent and whatever. I want to be alert and primed, you know, for the kill.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So.
Can't come fast enough, mate.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. Really excited that's coming, and really excited it's almost over, just to figure it out. But you know what's really cool heading into this? I took a test recently.
You found out you were 100% that bitch?
A little bit. I have an IQ of 129.
Ooh.
Which, I don't know if you know what that number means in relation to IQ.
Yeah.
But it means I'm in the top 4% of people at taking an IQ test.
Yeah, you're a genius.
Close to it. Close to it. Margaret handily beat me. She's 139. Well, which means that she's in the top 2% of people at taking an IQ test.
I'm sorry to have to bring this back up again, but one of my... there's nothing to do with intelligence. It was just, it made me laugh so much. I said something as a reference to something in history, and you said, I get that reference. And Margaret went, no, you don't.
Oh, I love that. Oh,
no,
yeah.
No, you don't, honey, or no, something like that. And it was just like, because she knew what you were thinking of, but it was just. It was so, oh God, delivered with perfect timing, perfect pitch. Just like,
I know what you know. You don't know that. And she was right. And she was completely right. I had
punctured you, absolutely punctured you, took your air out of your tires.
Yeah, she's a brilliant.
But yeah, it's got nothing to do with intelligence. No. But like, that is interesting. I don't think I can take IQ tests because I don't think they will work for me.
Sure.
Because of the visual components, but this is interesting.
I wonder if there would be an audio IQ test or whatever, you know, if it's read to you and you can fill in the answers or something.
Yeah.
Like that. But yeah, we took it at
the
difficult to remember URL. So I'll put it, it's in the show notes, but it's IQtest.com.
Oh, okay.
And Margaret and I were having a little bit of a stressful time. We were both kind of on edge a little bit and kind of like, it wasn't necessarily a fight, but it was just kind of like, just a little bit of aggravation. Mm-hmm. And somehow that was the way that we kind of like solved things and got back together. We were both really happy that we were both smart and that she was a little bit smarter. So that was really fun.
I like that as a resolution of just going, you know, we're both smart. There's something kind of...
Yeah.
Because it's so easy to get like entrenched and like be able to pull yourself, both of you being able to pull yourself out of it and go, what are we doing? We're both smart people. IQtest.com. I'm looking at this now because I did one of these a while back, and it's one that you had to pay for.
Yeah.
And it was definitely a scam.
Yeah.
And this obviously yours is not.
It has a similar kind of scammy feel at the end. It's like, oh yeah, if you want the full breakdown, then you got to pay.
Yeah.
But if you just want your number, then you have to put in your email and they'll email you the number.
Oh, okay.
And it's like, you know, yeah, I don't like having to give out my email for things. No. I wish they just put it there, but yeah, then yeah, they get the email and it's just like $129. And that was like all the email was. So I was like, oh, okay, that's great.
Nice. Would it be, you've done it, so you can tell me whether this is the case. Mm-hmm. I wonder sometimes, I do wonder, like, I think I've got to certain centers of intelligence, I think I'm quite high at.
I agree.
But I also know that I'm very bad at games.
Mm.
Like, you know, mm-hmm, I'd say that actually, certain games I'm very bad at, but it's because I think I don't have a strategic brain.
Mm.
Or it's a part of me that I haven't exercised. But there's a game at the moment that I'm addicted to. So the New York Times have all these, you know, the different games, and they bought Wordle and stuff, and that's how me and my dad got sucked into it.
Mm-hmm.
And they have these mini crosswords.
Okay.
And they are just like, like they're just, just like perfect little brain snacks, because they're like, they're usually not more than like 8x8.
Ooh, okay.
And sometimes they are like 5x5 or, you know, 5x6, whatever. So they're really small, really kind of snackable.
Mm.
And they're timed, you know, as you would expect. Sure. And there's a little leaderboard. And, you know, my dad probably beats me 60-40%, maybe 65-70-ish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, I'm not embarrassed by my by my efforts. But, you know, sometimes I misread a question or whatever.
Sure.
That always slows me down. But, you know, not too shabby. But they are so, they're just little, these little satisfying morsels. Mm-hmm. When you complete them, it's just like, oh, it just feels so good. And what's lovely is you can pay for packs. So they've got all these different packs, but they post a new one every day, and the archive is available for you for free to just play back.
Oh, wow.
Through. So I've been going back through. Mm-hmm. I think I'm in the end of 2023 now. So I've been playing from today and going backwards. So yeah, I completed January today, I think, and I started getting into it. And I try not to do too many a day, because I could just sit there for ages and do these.
Yeah.
They're just so addictive.
Uh-huh.
And they're brilliant. And it's wholesome. You know, there's no ad. There's no nothing. It's just do the quiz. Do another one if you want. And I always want. I love it.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I saw it when over New Year's, I was hanging out with Margaret's mom, and she was playing one of the New York Times games, and it was like, you're given like 8 words, and there's going to be, maybe there's like 10 words, and there's going to be 4 combinations of them that they have like.
Yeah, so that's connections.
Connections. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
That was pretty fun.
Yeah, that is stolen from a UK quiz show called Only Connect.
Oh, there you go.
It's one of the rounds they do. It's called the Only Connect Wall or something, and the interface is almost exactly the same.
Oh,
there's one or two red herrings. The only difference is when they do it on the show, you are allowed a lot more false, like what the New York Times called mistakes. You know, which is a bit patronizing.
Yeah,
but you know, sometimes they can be infuriating.
Mm-hmm.
And with a lot of this stuff, especially with the minis, as satisfying as I find them, you do have to have a decent knowledge of Americana.
Sure. Yeah.
Because it gets a bit like,
yeah.
And some of the stuff I'm like, I don't know which state has this flower or whatever.
Right.
But it'll be like, you know, if it's a product name, I usually, because, you know, just the amount of friggin' of your culture.
Oh, yeah.
I consume. I think that's where me and my dad, it's like he'll get there by guesswork or by filling in the other clues, whereas often I can, that'll be a weird, you know. So yeah, I want to know how smart I am.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear your number.
I don't think it's exceptional, but I'm clever in other ways.
Yeah, I want to say we looked up and that like an average American is around like 95 or something like that.
Okay.
And then we looked up a bunch of celebrities, and like all the top celebrities, like it was in you were in the 140 to 160 range of like the smart people that you'd think about, like the Bill Gateses and the Elon Musks and the George Clooney's and whatever, like these people that are like really famous. And
Arnie's
really
got a purportedly quite high IQ, I believe.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sylvester Stallone, I think, is in Mensa.
Oh. I would be surprised about it. No offense, just...
Yeah, he's apparently got a high IQ of 160.
Oh, wow. Yeah, see, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And that's one of those weird things where... I think this may be an accident of birth, whatever. And I didn't realize this was possible. I thought he had cerebral palsy, but he has. I thought this was only a temporary condition that I didn't think you could be born with it, but he was born with Bell's palsy.
Oh, wow.
Which is what... And so it's one of those kind of mean things like, I can't do it, but when people do the Sly Stallone voice, they're making fun of someone with a disability.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, and so I think he potentially went into a thing of like, I guess I've got to sound like a jarhead. I guess those are the roles that I'm going to get because I've got a slightly, you know, floppy face.
Yeah.
And it's just, yeah, like people get it. It's like a mini stroke and it's usually temporary.
Huh.
And it just, you know, one side of your face sags and that's what he's got.
Yeah.
And so I think that's probably why people underestimate him.
Yeah, for sure.
I guess. Same with Arnie.
Ding, ding, ding.
You know.
Yeah.
Big beefcake. Mm-hmm. And also, like, there was that wonderful thing I remember in Modern Family, the sitcom. There's one of the characters is Mexican. And there's a wonderful moment where she's the much younger second wife to the patriarch of the family.
Uh-huh.
And at one point, he decides that he wants to learn Spanish. And there's just this one moment, this beautiful moment where she's like, ha! You sound dumb, you know, because it's like everybody thinks I'm dumb because, you know, English isn't my first language. Now you know what it feels like to sound dumb.
Nice.
And it's just like a lovely little moment that we I'm so guilty of it, of really I won't say underestimating because it goes both ways, but like estimating people on their, you know, I was gonna say eloquence, but on their not even diction, but just their fluency of speech and their written communication. Like I really am judgy about people on that.
Yeah,
and it's easy to be something I wrestle with.
Yeah,
yeah.
I fall into the same trap.
Yeah, I had a thought over the it was last night actually, and I ended up talking about this in a meeting today, and I don't know where you stand on this. I'd be sort of curious in terms of. I was thinking about the youth of today.
Kids these days.
The kids these days. And individualism.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm interested in, like, I don't know, throwing this intellectual ball around with you, Brendan.
Mm-hmm.
I posit that we are in a moment of society, and I think, you know, ebbs and flows and it's all a pendulum, and right now the pendulum seems to be swinging very much in favor of individualism and away from personal, in some ways, personal responsibility. I was, you know, there's a couple of podcasts that I edit that are in the world of work, and you know, some of that talks about, there's a lot about psychological safety, which is, you know, I'm a fan of and believe in, and this is, you know, ways that we can have challenging ideas and challenging conversations, but in a way that feels safe, and that's great. But there's also an increasing discussion that, like, unfair things shouldn't happen to you. You shouldn't be in any way maligned or mistreated or in any way that makes you feel uncomfortable. You shouldn't have to be uncomfortable in life. You shouldn't, you know, there's all these things. And tell me about what that reaction is.
My first thought was, without those struggles, without those hard things hitting you, you never learn.
Mm.
You'll never grow. You'll never, because it'll just be fine. So why would you need to put yourself through the hardship of trying to learn something?
But also, when shitty things do happen, which is inevitable.
Exactly. You're not prepared for it.
It then becomes... it's always someone else's fault. It's always they didn't open the door wide enough for you. They didn't create the right environment for you. They didn't enable the, you know, yeah, whatever for you.
Yeah.
And it erodes personal responsibility. Yeah. And when I say I mean like taking care of your own shit, as yeah, in taking care of how you deal, like of how you, of your resilience, mm-hmm, of your, of all that stuff. Like, yeah, you know, to your point, yes, if nothing bad ever happens to you, you don't know what to do when something does, but bad things happen to us all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, or just uncomfortable things and annoying things. And like, yeah, it seems like we're moving more into society. And like, I say this genuinely from a point of curiosity and interest rather than like old man yelling at clouds, although I'm sure there is some and we'll get to that. But like, I just find it interesting in terms of the societal pendulum.
Yeah.
That it feels like that's where we're going. And
for sure,
if you are uncomfortable, unhappy, then that is someone else's problem.
Yeah.
And it's like, sure, but also let's A, try and imagine a world where everyone's doing their best.
Yeah.
And then from there, let's move into, okay, this didn't work out for you. You didn't win in this particular sack race. That's not a fault of the sack. It's not a fault of the person blowing the whistle. It's not, you know, yeah, it might just be you had a shitty run of it.
Yep.
And so what you've got to do is you've got to be okay and pick yourself up.
You've got to train. You've got to try again. Yeah,
yeah.
You can't always win every time. There's other people competing.
No.
Not that everything is competition, but like just.
No.
Even competing against your yeah, best time or, you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've been thinking a lot about comfort lately. It's something I want to challenge within God mode. It's something that I want to challenge within myself. These things, like for many years, what you said reminded me of, I think you even said comfort and like, it reminded me of how people seek comfort and want to get to that safe place and want to stay there. Once they find it, they want to stay there because it's comfortable and they fear the unknown and all these other things. But there's so many not hidden and also very hidden costs to having comfort. Listen to an excellent episode of We Made It Weird, which is the Pete Holmes and Val kind of side podcast to You Made It Weird with Pete Holmes. They had an episode where they were talking about comfort and brought it to this interesting perspective that I hadn't really considered because Pete had, he does all these self growth journeys all the time. And he was just watching or listening to something about comfort and how, like, with the invention of the refrigerator, we get this comfort of having food, these types of foods that normally would spoil, available to us all the time. And what that the secret cost, or one of the secret costs to that, is when we make a meal, we can just put it in the fridge and save it for later, which seems great, but it also means we don't take our leftovers to our neighbor and enjoy a shared meal with them. We have AC and heating in our homes. And that seems great. And it's top level, very helpful.
Yeah. Maslow's hierarchy.
Even life-saving.
Yeah, yeah.
But also it means we don't cuddle up under a blanket with our loved one at night, maybe as much. And we have the heat on and we're just sitting over by ourselves. And it lowers that human connection. You know, and there's a lot of consequences for comforts that we can think of for like travel and other things. But like the idea here is like every comfort that you enjoy has probably a known cost and probably a hidden cost, something that you aren't really thinking about that you're sacrificing in order to have this comfort. And sometimes that sacrifice is something that is really great or really vital or hard to achieve otherwise. And we get very comfortable laying in bed, staring at our phones, scrolling through Instagram. And that's at the sacrifice of good sleep. You know, that we get very comfortable going to fast food and because it's quick and tasty. And it's like processed foods in general, they are so comfortable. They're so soft and easy to eat, and just like, so you can eat so much and so quickly, and there's a lot of consequences for that. Anyways, so that was where my mind went when you brought up the kids these days and how much they like their comforts. Man.
Where this started for me, and I don't know why I got on this track yesterday, but it's something that I come back to every now and again, and it's difficult because when, like, even we're in a society now where like everything feels so jumpy and everybody's waiting for, they're reading ahead and they are anticipating what you're going to say and prejudging it.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least that is my perception.
Yeah, I see that.
Even the phrase, I'm just asking the questions, comes with it this like, that means you are already a baddie because, you know, we have all agreed as a society that this is what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had this thought yesterday, popped up, about allyship. And that's good and noble.
Yeah.
But oh, God. I was thinking about trans allyship,
mm-hmm,
and how vehemently defended that is.
Yeah.
And I'm not making a judgment about, mm-hmm, that. I have my own opinions. I also have my own things. And it's like, I'm also cognizant of like, it doesn't matter what my opinions, mm-hmm, are. It doesn't matter what I know or don't know, or mm-hmm, what I haven't done the thinking on, or what I don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, what matters is how I treat another human being.
Yes.
But it was interesting thinking about, I think I was, for whatever reason, I was imagining a scenario where I was being called upon to talk about what I thought about a particular trans issue. And I was playing out this scenario in my head of like, why do I need to have,
mm-hmm,
an answer to that?
Yeah.
Well, because we have to figure out whether you're like for us. And I was, mm-hmm, like, there are so many other groups of people,
yeah,
that could use allyship. But right now, our focus is, you know, like, mm-hmm, think about racism, think about sexism, think about ableism.
Oh, yeah.
Anti-Semitism, you know, all sorts of various things. But
yeah,
nothing, and again, I'm not saying it shouldn't be, but nothing is defended as vigorously as stuff around your genitalia.
Yeah.
And it was just interesting. And that's why, you know, I then went into this individualism thing.
Mm-hmm.
I did, you know, because it can then bleed into gender identity and that kind of stuff, which, you know, is its own thing.
Yeah.
And how some people have their own, like, create their own gender. And it just, it got me into, mm-hmm, a whole thing about individualism and like,
mm-hmm,
we don't want to erase people's identities, but we can spend way too long on them.
For sure.
At the expense of the stuff that's more interesting about them. Like, what do they like? What are they like? Who do they, mm-hmm, like? What are the things that interest them other than the need to lead with a, I am he, him, Mark. It's like, tell me about yourself. Like, I want to know you. Like, that's so much more important. Yeah, there you go. Like,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Here's a big ball of stuff, Brendan. What do you think about that? I don't know. What's like? It's fun to explore this stuff, and like, we, you know,
mm-hmm,
I just, yeah. You're an intelligent man. I'm interested in what that makes you think as well.
So the test says,
because I'm just a simple Southern lawyer.
I like how you're like, you did this thought experiment of like, what do I think on this controversial topic? Wait, why do I have to have an opinion on this controversial,
yeah,
topic? Here, Brendan, tell me what your opinion is,
yeah,
on it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm not looking for your opinion on the controversial
no,
topic,
yeah,
but yeah. But yeah, it's just, it's a weird thing, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
we all, at some point, like, we have to face this reckoning of, what do you think about this particular issue? And it's like, it's okay for me not to, because there's lots of other things I could have an opinion on,
yeah,
but choose not to. But, you know, it could be religion, it could be all sorts of things. And it's like, but we've picked this one.
Anyway, as a white dude with all this privilege who understands only the surface level of what other cultures and people have to go through, trying to be an ally, trying to be woke. You know, I've gone through so many stages of learning and phases of understanding, times where I've, you know, strongly held a position that has since kind of loosened up over time. I fiercely defend every person's right for peace from other people. Like, no, I don't wish harm on any. I wish the best for everybody. I'm a humanist, I guess. I haven't searched humanist. I don't know what.
Yeah, that is a specific that is a specific thing. But whether you qualify, you may well qualify. Yeah.
I said it as just being like humanist.
Yeah, and then
I realized, oh no, humanist is a thing. I don't know what they are. So don't label me that. But I just like fuck with the labels, you know? Like
yeah.
I know we're all so afraid, and we want to classify people and make sure that we're within our tribes. And I love a tribe as a close knit group of people that are all working towards each other. But tribalism, where tribes are against tribes, like fuck that. Like we're a tribe of tribes. You know, we're all just humans on this earth, you know, trying to survive. Like let's just fucking get along. There's nothing wrong with anybody else. As soon as we all realize that, then we can turn on those fucking giraffes. Like we can, you know, finally get together and take those fuckers down. Their necks are too long.
It's time we made a stand. I think you've helped me hit on something there, which is I don't fucking care.
Yeah. I really don't either.
Like, and I mean this in the best possible way. So, exactly. You know, okay, we're talking about trans stuff. We're talking about gender stuff. I had one of the most, and I know this is the, like, some of my best friends are black argument. That's fine. If you want to label that, that's okay. But I know that I had one of my favorite episodes of List Envy, because it was charming as fuck, was with someone who presents as a different gender.
Sure.
And we also had a conversation about some of the games that we were talking about, because it was about point-and-click adventure games. And she mentioned that some of the games that we talked about are pretty anti-trans. And I'm like, cool, that gets removed. We don't need to talk about it, because that causes offense. Done. Mm-hmm. You as a person I care about, and like I had this conversation with a friend, and they kind of bristled at this, and I can kind of understand where they're bristling. But like, I think I'm more and more comfortable going, I don't care about the politics of it. I don't care about the identity of it on a mass level. Like, I don't want to be an ally for an amorphous blob of people. I want to be an ally for Jeff, for Sandra, for, you know what I mean? Like, the individual person. Because, and I will say this, and then you can label me an asshole and we can throw it away and that's fine. It's an opinion that is loosely held that may be wrong. That's fine. I think there are aspects when we get into gender identity for some, very vehemently emphasizing for some, that are about seeking happiness or a sense of belonging or fulfillment where perhaps that might not be the seat of it. Mm. And I want people to be happy.
Yeah, same.
I don't care what your identity is. I want you to be happy. Yeah. I want good things for you. If that genuinely, you know, if you've lived your life being told you're this thing and actually you fundamentally know yourself to be something else and that makes you happy to finally embrace the identity that you've been denied, then fucking yes, absolutely, you do that. Mm-hmm. But what it can sometimes feel like, and this is as an observer looking through what I read and what I see and what I perhaps blinkeredly understand, that it feels like there are people who are looking for happiness and hoping that this thing might be the thing that's made them unhappy.
For sure.
And then discovering that it isn't. And I want those people to be happy, and I want those people to find the thing that makes them happy in that purest sense, you know?
Yeah, but it's not a thing to find. To be happy. It's within us.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know, you know, there are people, you know, gender dysphoria is one thing. And then there's, you know, there's all sorts of other things. And so this is absolutely not saying that everybody who identifies as this is just unhappy. And it's like,
for
no.
Sure. No, no, no.
But I also think that there is a number, perhaps, that there are. And it is really, really difficult to know that about yourself until you get there, I think.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as someone who has sought diagnosis after diagnosis to try and help him explain why he feels broken.
Same.
To actually finally get to a point of being able to accept himself, I'm speaking as myself. Same. You know, like, that has to come from that, you know, you have to get to a place where you can, you know, and stop looking, stop searching for the thing and just go, yeah, the thing that I am is, you know, this is what I am, and it has its really awesome things and it has its things that are more challenging. But it's not going to be solved by a diagnosis or a label because, you know, I am unlabelable, perhaps. Or I'm very simply labelable, but it doesn't matter because I am accepting of the label of Mark. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's not the end of the journey. There's still plenty more. And I had a long conversation with a patron saint of the show today where we really dug into some stuff, like, from early and she's not a therapist, but like, it got into there,
yeah,
some really early stuff from childhood. Like, I've got some conversations to have with bits of myself that I couldn't separate out, like the voices, the what we call the unhelpful stories or the limiting beliefs, that like, we can keep those attached and inside of ourselves and not. Like, if you can find a way to give that a voice and a personality, that means you can have a conversation with it. That means you can ask it, how is it trying to help? Because it always is. Yeah. And it can be clumsy and it can be, you know, it can do a poor job, but it's always trying to help. And so if you can find a way to just split a little bit and go, let's have a conversation and figure out, how are you trying to help? And you've been trying to help for, you know, 41 years, for example. You've put in a shift. How would it feel like? How would it feel if you took a break for a little bit?
Yeah.
I'm not telling you to go away, and I'm not telling you you've done a bad job. You've worked really hard for 41 years. How about you sit this one out for a sec and let's see what happens if someone else drives? And then if you've got things to say, you can contribute. But, you know, treat those bits with kindness. And so, yeah, I think...
This is sounding a bit like internal family systems. Mm. I don't know if you're familiar with that. I'm not.
It sounds like this thing. I don't know what it
it's Margaret calls it parts work, and it's like talking to parts of yourself.
Yes.
And usually those parts are like little childhood, like when you're a teenager, when you're a child, when you're this and that. Those little aspects, those parts of you hold on to thinking that you have this problem and you have to fix it in a certain way. And so then as you go on later in life, you encounter a problem that's maybe similar or reminds that part of you to activate, and they, you know, they act in anger, they act in fear, they act in you know, whatever was ingrained to you earlier on. And so, like, parts work is about going deep into that and like telling that part of you, it's okay, you were doing the right thing, you helped me so much when I needed it, I don't need that help anymore, you can relax. And then you can stop having those unfavorable reactions in the moment.
And I think it takes time and it takes practice.
Absolutely. And repetition.
You know, it doesn't go away straight away, but it those are conversations. And you know, me, I realized, you know, I created this sort of character as called Mr. Gray a few years ago, who is the one that, this sort of tall, besuited figure who tells me where I'm short, you know, deficient, and need to be fixed. And it was, you know, it can often be pernicious, and he hides, and he has different tactics for, you know, making me feel smaller. And we uncovered a new character today, which was really, really interesting. And being able to give it a name, like as soon as I was able to give it the describe the matron. So in the, I don't know what it's like for you in the US, but in the UK we have this sort of sort of Nurse Ratched kind of vibe. If you ever read or seen
that,
the film,
I've heard that Cuckoo's name, Nest. But I don't know the reference. As is my usual.
That's it. So we have this kind of archetype of the stern nurse.
Sure.
Usually quite broad-shouldered, broad-bosomed. Mm-hmm. Tall, you know, sort of basically kind of a square, kind of a square shaped human being.
Sure.
Who they are in a caring profession, but the way that they demonstrate that care is not necessarily with, and it's sometimes it can be, but there's a, you know, there's absolutely a sternness there. There's not a lot of warmth.
Yeah.
But it's all for, you know, for your own good and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I sort of discovered this character who can speak quite softly, but is trying to keep me in my bed. Mm. And is like, you can't do that because you're not a proper human being. Like you're not,
whoa,
you weren't made properly. Like, and you know, it's not trying to punish me. It's not, you know, it's speaking not exactly tenderly, but it is, you know, like, no, you can't go and, you know, experience this thing because that's not what, that's for normal people. You're not, you know.
Devastating.
Yeah.
That's world disrupting. That's just annihilating. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's funny you use the word annihilating because that came up in the Enneagram report, which is where this discussion was taking place. And being able to give voice to that part of myself that is so fiercely trying to keep me safe in such a way that, you know, it has labeled me as being kind of apart from most human beings. And it was really interesting looking at that and looking at the ways I've sort of separated myself from Gen Pop, if you like.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as an Enneagram 9, like we want harmony, we want to get on with people and we want everyone to get along and, you know, we want to create peace. And we want to connect with human beings. And it got me thinking about, as you would say, soccer. And how that is such a social glue. And I genuinely had the thought, like, I would be, and this is an idea for a, I actually had this as a brief idea for a podcast, is like getting my brother to like teach me about football because I think I want to get it. I think I want to like have a knowledge of it and not like, because I think part of my eschewing of it, part of my like dismissal of it, is part of that, is what the matron says, is like, that's not for you.
Oh, interesting.
That's for people. He thinks he's people. Actually, it got me thinking, like, yeah, I wonder how much of that is almost performative.
Yeah.
And like, what would happen if you actually took an interest? Because I think you have it in you to take an interest. And then you have this absolute social, like, you don't need to be. There are aspects of personalities that sometimes they might want to be a little bit iconoclastic or a little bit different and stand out, and that's fine. It's like with everything that we, you know, it's becoming my motto for life. I was even thinking about this last night in terms of like the likes of, oh, this is why I started thinking about this, because someone was talking about being friends with Graham Linehan, who is a sitcom writer here, who is now, like J.K. Rowling, a famous TERF, a famous anti-trans person. And I was like, it again comes down to have your opinions, but don't be weird about it.
Yeah.
Stop, you know, like the moment it becomes like, wow, you've taken it too far. Like, yeah, it's so with the football thing, it's like, okay, you can not be into football, but there's probably also a way that you can not be weird about it.
Yeah.
You know, you can have a knowledge, a passing knowledge,
yeah,
and that's useful as social lubricant, but you can also, you don't have to make it part of your identity to be anti-football.
Right. Right.
And that was just, it was an interesting thought that like just popped into my head kind of as I was thinking about all this separation from, and you know, he thinks he's people, of like, my brain just went to football and just went, you probably could be interested in it because there's probably quite a few things to be interested in. You don't, it doesn't have to be that you've shut yourself down from it or away from it because that's what people like, that's what humans like. Maybe you would like it too.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man. I've been also a part of the anti team sports rallying crew for a long time as well. And so I feel that very much. And I also feel the opening up and the allowing of, hey, maybe actually I don't have to be against this. You know, like I see the people who go to the other extreme of making it so much of their identity that they are this sports fan and get so nuts about it. And I just don't get it.
They're being weird about it.
They're being weird. Super weird. And like, not only weird, but like kind of violent or aggressive or harmful.
That tribalism, yeah.
Yeah. Seeing that extreme side of it, seeing that extreme side of anything pushes me away from it. We all, media, surface level connections often show that extreme either first or early or often because it's sensational, because it drives clicks, it drives interest, it's provocative, and all that stuff kind of really pushes me away and makes me, you know, like even the path to enlightenment. Like somebody, you talk to somebody about enlightenment, and one of the first things that they're probably going to think of is some monk in a robe meditating 18 hours a day, and it seems like boring as fuck. And it's like, what kind of life is that? And I'm like, yeah, but that's not the point at all. That's kind of being weird about it, you know? That's taking it to an extreme. And like, it's cool. I think it's really cool that there's people doing that. And I admire it. And like, I kind of would love to do that and just like spend my life just doing nothing but meditating and like, just be, oh man, that sounds pretty great. But I'm not gonna drop my life and go do that. I'm gonna just experience my life as it comes. And that's going to include an enlightened path. And that enlightened path doesn't have to be full of sacrifice of what I think life is. And that in life includes people liking sports. And I can dig it. You might know. I don't think I've talked to you about this. But I have sports trauma. I have team sports trauma. My mom wanted me to be in team sports, and I did not want to be in team sports. I was in 7 years of baseball, and I hated every single minute of it. I was like a right fielder. We didn't actually get snow cones after the game. We got like, you know, maybe it was orange slices or something, but you know, Capri Suns. But it was like hardly a consolation prize. You know, I did 2 years of soccer and I enjoyed that a lot. And I don't know why I stopped. I did like 3 years of football and, you know, really, I excellently warmed that bench. Like it was a prime sweet spot right there. And, you know, like it wasn't insignificantly because of my unknown health conditions. Not unknown to me. I knew I was having health conditions, but nobody else seemed to care. And that made it really hard for me to do the sports. And then like, you know, being out, oh, like, oh man, our baseball team, when I was in middle school, I want to say seventh grade, we went to state, which like the state championships. So we beat enough of the teams around us to go to compete with the teams that were farther away from us. And my coach comes to me and he's like, so son, if you come to the game, you know, we got the big game on Sunday or whatever. And, you know, if you come to the game, there's a rule that we have to play you have to play. Everyone that comes is part of the rotation. But if you didn't come,
oh, God.
then we wouldn't have to, we'd just be able to play the players that are better than you.
Oh God.
Yeah. So that wasn't fun to hear. I still went anyway and we lost. And, I like to think that it was
because fuck him, right?
It was my contribution. I was like, fuck you, dude. You're a piece of shit. Go back to hockey. That's nothing against hockey. He was just typically the hockey coach. I know nothing of hockey. That was not a hockey insult. I'm sorry, hockey players. Oh, I also played basketball for a little while and didn't do great at that either. Ooh. But that was more fun, slightly. Mm-hmm. Although the sprinting. Recently, last year, I think, Margaret's brother got the whole family Blazers tickets. And Trailblazers are the local state basketball team, NBA team.
Mm-hmm.
We went to that show, and that was quite a spectacle. Like that, you know, like...
Mm.
What a crazy thing to, oh my God. And it was like not something I want to do all the, oh, he also took us to a baseball game. And that was really, they were both really fun events. And I wouldn't want to go, like, I wouldn't want to make that my normal, like, weekly routine of going to a sports event. I would get super burnt out of that. But like going maybe a couple times a year to a thing, like that's pretty fun. Everybody gets so excited and like, you just get a cheer for things and yeah, it's, and you get hot dogs if you want to, you know, destroy your gut, and it's, it's all fun. But yeah, so I applaud your idea of learning more about soccer, football, and.
Yeah. I mean, who knows, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, I just, more things where we can just go, Are you being a bit weird about it?
Mm-hmm.
Are you locking yourself off because you're mate? I mean, that's the other thing, is like making X your identity.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like I've already said, you know, whether it's your gender pronouns, like fine, have the gender pronoun, but like it doesn't have to be part of your identity. Being vegan doesn't have to be part of your identity. It can just be an aspect of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to lead with it. Mm, yeah. I'm interested in like exploring the world and even figuring out, like, am I? Oh, I almost got like kind of goosebumps of almost a, like, without sounding too like incredibly wanky, but kind of having a rebirth.
Mm.
Like, I've lived my first 41 years as a rather successful alien. Masquerading as a human being, and now I've earned my I've earned my wings, I've earned my heart, you know, whatever that one thing is that like makes us actually human, and now I get to explore. It's like Barbie when she goes and sees her gynecologist at the end of the film, spoilers. It's, she's lived all this world in all this life in Barbie land, and like she's now going, okay, I think it's time for me to explore the real world, mm-hmm. with Will Ferrell as the boss of the head of the company. And there's something kind of exciting about that idea of like, I'm going to try and like see what this human thing is, this human experience is like. Humans like football and humans like cycling. And, you know, it's like, I've still got my shit that I can't do, but like humans also ask for help when they need help.
Yeah.
What a fun notion, Brendan.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh,
we've talked about a lot of fun and a bit of controversial things, and I feel like the listener should probably have a fairly clear understanding of like our hearts in the right place.
You know
place.
Where our hearts.
Yeah, if you did have any thoughts or feedback, listener, convergencepod@icloud.com. And as always, correct me if I'm wrong. hard here, huge success. It's hard to overstate my satisfaction. Oh, the delay makes it so hard.